Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Don Williams, Sports Recruiting USA, and we've got another great version of our Inside College Soccer Podcast. I'm with our guest, Erica Sutter. Erica Sutter, some of you may know her as the Fit Soccer Queen from Twitter, and she's got a really nice following. And Erica and I have kind of become friends, and we've been talking. Thanks for coming on the podcast today, Erica.
Thanks for having me. I was really excited for this, and I love everything you're doing at Sports Recruiting USA. I always tell my athletes, you're like the only company I trust in this space. So I'm always sending people your way, and I just love the message.
Well, thank you. Yeah, just former college coaches trying to do the right things for kids and families. That's about it, huh? So Erica, you were a soccer player, huh? You played in college.
I did. So I played at Johns Hopkins University from 2008 to 2012. So it seems like very long ago. But I started my soccer journey when I was 6 years old in the rec system. And I had stayed in that system until age 13. And then that's when I entered travel. And this was when WAGS was the top league. ODP was the best thing to be on. So I was on that as well. I played for Bethesda Rapids, which were, they were the top team in the state of Maryland at the time. So that was the travel club that I had decided to go to when I was 13. And up until that point, when I was playing rec, I was just being a kid and I just really enjoyed soccer. I was having so much fun playing rec that I didn't feel the need to want to hop teams and just like bop around. But also this was a time when there weren't a bunch of travel clubs trying to recruit like 8 year olds, you know? Right. So I look back and I'm like grateful for that experience, but my parents were just amazing in this process because they like knew that travel clubs existed, but they just saw I was having fun recreationally. And they're like, you know what? She's really enjoying it. She loves her teammates and her coach. So let's just have her ride out this rec thing for a while. And that's what happened. And then when I turned 13, I was the one who said to my parents, okay, I want to reach another level and try out for travel. So it was my decision. And my parents were just really supportive. And they're like, is that what you want? And I was like, absolutely, let's go. So I go to the travel tryout and I absolutely crushed it. I didn't feel like I was behind playing rec. I had also owned a lot of my development and always practiced on my own. I played in the neighborhood. I always was exercising. So I just developed into a good athlete in my youth. And then when I switched to travel, I was so prepared and ready to play at that level. And then all through high school, I played for Bethesda and then ended up going to Johns Hopkins University and actually turning down several D1 schools in the Big Ten and the ACC. So at that time, people said I was crazy, and I'm sure people today still think I'm a little crazy, but I had an amazing experience at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, I'm a West Coaster, and I find that, I don't know, maybe anybody west of the Mississippi doesn't quite understand what Johns Hopkins is about. I was sitting on the sideline with their men's coach this weekend and we were talking because every once in a while I get a possible Johns Hopkins type candidate of one of my clients. And, you know, he was explaining to me the high, you know, over 1500 for sure on the SAT. Yeah. And he says, you know, it's changed over the years, but currently that's what it looks like. And so, you know, it's not for every kid and it's not for every environment. It's not for every player. But my goodness, for the right person, what a great education. Get to be around a bunch of really smart people every day, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. The SAT requirements have drastically changed since I applied when I was in high
That's what
school.
he was telling me, that it's changed,
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, I was still a straight A student and had a lot of extracurriculars. And I'm thankful that those SAT requirements weren't a thing when I was applying because I just wasn't good at standardized tests. But overall, I mean, it's important to focus on academics, even schools that aren't a Johns Hopkins, like University of Maryland or George Washington or like University of Washington, like all these like bigger schools are looking for student athletes. So I always tell parents, like, it's great that your kids focusing on their soccer development, but they also need to be very good students because, as you know, Don, it's so cutthroat now, like even more than it was 15 years ago. And I can't even imagine how hard the recruiting process is.
Yeah, no, it is. And so I'm really glad you brought that up because it is important that parents understand that. And it happens very early, doesn't it? We see kids that get behind their freshman year and then it's really hard to catch up. Yeah,
Yeah.
so take it serious from day one, right?
Yeah, and that's another big thing I see with kids is they start this process too late. And college coaches won't even give them a look when they're attending an ID camp as a junior. So it is really important to start freshman year, definitely dial in sophomore year. And I think that was one thing that I did well was to just start really narrowing down schools I wanted to go to and not just being like, oh, I just want to go to like a big school because I like their jerseys and their mascot. But like really like getting clear on what I wanted out of a university, great team, great culture. That's a big one that people don't look at is the team culture. Student life, social life. Believe it or not, the Hopkins had a good social life. We studied hard, but we also enjoyed ourselves. So just like looking at like all these big rock things that you want out of a university is really important because worst case, maybe you get injured in your college soccer career. Would you still love that school if you're sidelined? And I don't, you know, I hate to like get worst case scenario, but people should be considering other things besides soccer.
Yeah, it's funny, Erica, because we've got two ends of the spectrum of the kids that I see that come across, and then of course everything on that spectrum. But one end is, look, soccer's my life. That's it. That's my life. I'm smart enough to know that I need to go to school and get an education while I'm playing soccer. That could be anywhere. I want a business degree. I want something general, marketing, business, liberal arts. Not that hard to find. And so they'll chase the soccer dream. And then the other end of the spectrum is the kid who says, look, I want to go to school. I want to go to Johns Hopkins. While I'm there, I'd like to play soccer. I want to play and I want to be happy at Johns Hopkins no matter what. So those are two ends of the spectrum. And then I see kids all along it. I do find that East Coast mentalities of parents and players are different than West Coast mentalities of parents and players. I find more parents who, probably before their kids were born, parents were convinced that their kid is going to go to Johns Hopkins or Amherst or Swarthmore or Bowdoin or Bates or whatever, any of the big ones academically. And then out here on the West Coast, we go, yeah, they're all kind of the same, which they are. Once you separate out the UCLAs and
Yeah.
the Caltechs and maybe the Claremont Mudd-Scripps and those types of schools that are maybe more comparable to the little Ivies and the NESCAC. There aren't that many. Rest of them are very, very good, fun, great colleges. You're going to get a good education and have a good experience. We get more of that on the West Coast than I see on the East Coast. I think the East Coast mentality of a lot of the parents is a little more tightly dialed into, my kid's not going to be able to make a half a li million dollars and live in New York City if they don't get a really good education, because they can't afford a $3 million apartment on the Upper East Side if they don't get a good education. We run into that set, and then we run into the everything in the middle. Like I say, it's a spectrum that the kids run on. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. Tell us, Okay, so here's a question. I'm curious. What was it that you struggled most with from the soccer side of things when you walked into John Hopkins? Was there anything where you said, I wish I would have known this, or I wish I would have been more prepared about this?
Oh my gosh. So in my own playing, or just like with
yeah,
the whole...
you personally, like oh, you get kids that come in and go, wish my college coaches had told me there was going to be a fitness test. It's like, told you, yeah, but I wasn't prepared. I didn't quite understand. So sometimes it's that aspect, or sometimes it's the, I wish I had known how to cook. I get that from kids every once in a while, probably more guys. Yeah. Is there anything that you struggled with that you wish that you'd have been more, or that you noticed that teammates were struggling with?
Yeah. I don't feel like I struggled that much when I got there, because I knew what to expect, physically and technically and tactically. And I worked really hard over the years to continue to level up all three of those in my game and not just be so dominant physically or so dominant technically. Like, I knew that at that level, I had to be everything or close to everything. I mean, Hopkins, we had a roster of 35 girls. That's a lot of people. And I went in freshman year and I was like, I want to start. I want to contribute. I want to get on the field. I don't think that's bad to say. No. I was always a competitive player. I wanted to actually get playing time at my college, especially if we're constantly on the road and it's a lot of time on top of all the academics. I want to contribute. I want to be out there. So going in, I had always done performance training. I had a speed coach, strength coach since I was in middle school. So I had been developing that over the years. And I truly think that gave me a huge edge, not just in the fitness test. I mean, the fitness test, I always got in the top three out of 35 girls as a freshman. And it also translated to me doing well in the practices and proving myself to start as a freshman. The coach saw that I was extremely conditioned. I could maintain my speed in the second half of the game and not get tired. And he was like, we're starting her as a freshman. Like, let's go. But I think also technically, I really grew, and I definitely owe it to playing pickup soccer with the guys the summer leading up to college. I had good technical skills, but I needed an environment harder than what I was about to go into. So I was like, all right, I'm going to play small-sided 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, 1v1 with college male soccer players before I go to Hopkins. And that helped so incredibly much. No amount of skills training with like no pressure and rehearsed and just being like doing tap dancing type drills was going to help me like prepare. So I just went into that tougher environment. So when I got to Hopkins, proving myself in preseason and all the scrimmages we were doing was the easiest thing I did because I was that prepared. So I felt that I had it down, but a lot of girls did struggle with the quickness of play, the amount of endurance and speed at that level. And I'm just really grateful that I got on board with the performance training early. And I always enjoy going out and just making my skills better and getting into these new environments. So I think if I can give any piece of advice, it's to continue to level up all aspects of your game, because everyone at that level is going to be coming in pretty good in all those areas, but how are you going to have an edge?
And that's the same experience, Erica, that I've seen with my top kids that have gone on to play at Stanford or Duke, or my own kid that was overseas playing in Europe and playing D1, is that the physical preparation piece is, I don't know. I see a lot of clubs train Erica, and I'm not going to name names or point things out, but I see a lot of clubs with that are still doing laps, that are still doing calisthenics, that are still, and they consider that, you know, that's their physical training. That's what it is. Or, you know, and then we see the top clubs today. Well, they get the ladders out and the cones out and the, as you said, the toe taps and all the It's like, oh no, we're doing our job preparing our kids physically when you and I know that that is, I don't know. It's trying to paint a house with a painter's brush, with a little styling brush. It's you're touching a piece of it. You're making a mark, but you're not really doing the preparation piece. What do you notice with your clients coming into you? Of course, you get them at all ages. Well, first of all, let's talk about that. Let's back this up. What is it that you do now?
I work with mainly female athletes, predominantly soccer players, but I have worked with lacrosse girls, softball, volleyball, gymnastics, because overall strengthening the body is the same across sports. there's not that much sport specific training you can do unless it's with your ball or with your racket or with your stick, or the conditioning drills are based on the energy demands or within small sided games. But overall with the girls I see, and I've been doing this for 10 years with my younger girls, so middle school girls who are just starting out, and this is when I recommend girls start with this type of training, is they're highly uncoordinated and they really struggle to just control their momentum and be able to pump the brakes and decelerate and then reaccelerate in another direction. So their change of direction is totally off because they're going through this awkward phase of growth. But the best way to mitigate that is for them to do some form of resistance training, because during growth spurt is when that they need these neuromuscular adaptations to happen, so that it's just like learning soccer skills. They need that muscle memory to be coordinated, to be balanced, to have good rhythm when they're sprinting. So with the young girls, we're working a lot on the basics. So just making sure that their sprint mechanics are good, the arm actions there, they're striking the ground with the ball of the foot. So just reinforcing those year round. And then just slowly adding in some loaded work when they're ready. And you decide when they're ready, when they've been training for a few months and they can prove to you that they can do some of these basic movements like lunges and squats with their body weight resistance. And then you can start to add load. And that's the most important part with young athletes as they go through their career. They need to gradually add load so that their muscles are actually being strengthened. So as I mentioned earlier, they need to enter in a harder environment in order to grow from it. So in this case, they need to add weight to their squat so that their muscle can build more. So it's really just about adding more stimulus as they go through their career. And as you said, like a lot of these clubs are just doing like calisthenics and there's no like rhyme or reason. There's definitely not a progression behind it. And it's just a random cacophony of exercises. It's really important that there is that progression. And it's so similar to the technical side of soccer, the tactical side. You're doing a lot of these things, starting with the basics, and then over that long term, you're slowly raising the threshold. So with their technical skills, they do it slow at first, and then they do it under speed, and then they do it under pressure. It's the performance training is the same thing.
That's a really good description of it, because it is, it's exactly right. So with females, I don't know, I've seen different numbers, but somewhere around 30% greater chance of soft tissue damage than males, and can have to do with cycles. But the fact is that females, I think in general, and you can see them on the field. You can see them where you go, oh, legs look a little soft. I'm concerned. You know, there's no muscular development at 17, 18 years old that you can see. You can't, and not that, you know, not that having telephone pole legs is a be all end all to solving things, because pro female athletes have ACL issues too, as well as male athletes. So it doesn't mean it, but it is that XL decel rate cut. Every ACL I've ever seen with the exception of the one or two where it was a bad collision at the wrong moment, have been because of acceleration and deceleration and cutting and changing directions. And it's just a give out. It's instant. And I'm really glad that you're addressing that, because it's something that I don't see a lot of clubs addressing. And as I always tell people, if you want to get to the next level as a soccer player, it's about change of pace. That's the difference maker. When I go out to these tournaments, Erica, all the players look about the same change of pace and about the same running ability and about the same speed. Some kids, it takes 20 yards to get up to speed. Other kids can do it in 2 yards. And since we deal with a sport where the average sprint is about 17, 18 yards on the long end, then, you know, yeah, if a kid takes 25 steps to get up to speed, they probably aren't going to make it to the next level. And so that cutting, that changing, that all of that stuff that you're talking about is vital, Erica, isn't it?
Yeah, and it impacts their tactical game as well. I'm not one of those performance coaches that is like, hey, you all need to rely on your physicality and not play tactical. No, you need it all. I mean, like you said, you need that extra burst to be able to go between the lines, to be able to do that counterattack, to be able to be a more attacking outside back. You need that. And I always say that, like, speed from performance training, it changes the game, whereas strength keeps athletes in the game. So the more they have strength in their muscles when they're doing a high velocity movement, like pumping the brakes and changing direction, their bones and joints are not getting those forces, but their muscles are. So their bones and joints are more safeguarded from those forces. So with soccer players especially, they need strength and speed. I'm very slow nowadays to program conditioning, because most of the girls I work with are already conditioned because they're ticking that box in their practices. And they're on very high level teams. Their coaches do a great job of making sure practices are moderate to intense with their small sided games. So they're getting their conditioning. But the two things that most soccer players miss, boys and girls, are speed and strength.
Yeah. Are there specific, have you noticed any muscle sets that kids have where there's like, yeah, a lot of kids are really weak in the hip flexors, or a lot of kids are really weak in the hamstrings, and this is causing an imbalance issue. What have you noticed?
Mm-hmm. All around for both boys and girls soccer players, definitely hamstring weakness, and also foot, ankles, calves. They lack the strength in their feet and calves, but also like the mobility in their ankles. And that plays a big role in good change of direction. And also just overall postural weakness. I always say that most like adolescent soccer players have that typical like head forward, shoulders like slouched over posture. And that just causes a whole storm within their lower extremity. So it could cause the hip flexors to be tight, and that limits their stride length, which decreases their speed. It could also cause their quadriceps to be more dominant, so that when they're doing a deceleration, they're not getting their hamstrings and their glutes involved, which makes the knee unstable. And then the hamstrings aren't doing their job when they're running a sprint. And a lot of hamstring strains come from athletes being weak in the hamstrings, but also not getting in their over 30 meter sprints. And that's due because coaches don't do over 30 meter sprint work at practices because right. It's in that small sided game setting. So yeah, those are the most common issues I see with soccer players. A lot of feet issues, because the cleats of today are very restrictive. And I'm finding that a lot of girls are just developing like bunions early on and just overall have foot pain. And then when you have foot pain, it just goes up the chain to the knees and the hip. So it's really important as best you can to be shoeless when you're not training and just walk barefoot as much as possible to really strengthen the feet and just spread out the feet more.
Yeah. I picked that up watching the national team train, and that's the second training was over with. Shoes went off and all the cool down was done barefoot on yeah. the floor. Don't know if it's still true, but they banned flip flops. They didn't want the thong effect.
Yeah.
Slide, you know, one of the kids in sliders as quick as they could, that type of thing. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always tried. That was 20 years ago. And I've remembered that. It makes sense to me because I know how my feet feel after 3-4 hours in cleats. I know how they feel. I know they hurt. I know it's painful. So I get it. So Erica, I hear you've got a new project, that you've been working very hard on for a while. Why don't you tell us about your project and your new release?
I'm really excited to talk about this. So this has been a year-long project, and I just came out with a paperback book called The Strong Female Athlete, A Guide to Reduce Injury, Improve Performance, and Increase Confidence. And I'm really excited for a few reasons. There's not any guide out there on female athlete training. So it's important to get that out there, but it's also a guide that is very holistic. And yes, it goes into the physical piece and just the differences between females and males with especially like during the growth spurt and how they're maturing differently and how you should adjust training. So there's a lot of like science and pediatrics within the book, but there's also a lot of other things in there that talk about how she can optimize her performance beyond just the strength training. That's just one sliver of it. And it's also about how she manages her school stress, how she sleeps, how she eats. That's a really big one. A lot of female athletes are under fueling and overtraining. So I talk about how it impacts their risk for injury if they're not looking at all these other pieces. Because in the past 10 years, I've seen, and this was earlier on when I was coaching, but I saw a lot of my strongest girls still suffering injuries. And I had to dive a little bit deeper as to why. And it was their chronic sleep deprivation. It was them constantly being in a state of stress because of school, or they're always on their phone and they're always overstimulated and just underrested. So I'm really excited because I think a lot of this is new to people. They think that training and injury reduction is just getting under the iron, but there's just so many more pieces to it. And if anything, this book is a serious call to action for parents, coaches, young girls to really take responsibility for their health. And this is not just about soccer performance. This is about just being healthy forever because their sport will end. So I really think it's going to light a fire within everyone. And I'm really pumped for it.
Well, before we go, I want to definitely let everybody know where they can get a copy of your new book. Yeah, I'm glad you're touching on the nutrition piece too, and the sleep piece, because those are, I noticed with college athletes, those are two of the major bugaboos that I come across. And I know when I was a coach, we'd have to have kids over to our home just to teach them how to cook and what nutrition in a meal looks like. And I know with all of our clients, I even hand out a plant-based protein chart to them. People think that you get your protein from chicken or fish or beef, but the fact is that none of us animals know how to produce protein. None of us. We all get our protein secondhand through fruits and veggies. I think that you're touching on this nutrition piece is really important, Erica. What do you notice? Like, what are some of the most common nutritional slip-ups that you see in your players where they think they're doing it right? But they aren't quite getting it right. What do you notice?
First one is definitely not getting enough calories. So a lot of young female athletes think that 1200 calories a day is going to suffice, but with the amount of energy they're expending between like 3 to 4 practices a week, and then maybe 1 to 2 games on the weekend, they need 2 to 3 times that. So I recommend, if they're like really struggling with those calorie needs, to work with a registered dietitian so they can make sure that everything's calculated and they're on the right track. And then a second one is just not getting enough of the key nutrients that support female athlete growth and their hormones. So the first one is vitamin D and calcium. So a lot of female athletes might suffer stress fractures. That's a very common one if they're not getting enough of those nutrients, especially during the growth spurt when their bones are still growing and the density's filling in. So it's really important to get vitamin D and calcium. And then another one is getting enough iron, especially with the menstrual cycle. And if they're not getting enough iron, then they're going to feel extremely fatigued, lack of focus, and it's just not enough for them to be able to perform at a high level. So I usually recommend getting a registered dietitian if you need, or just taking inventory of how their energy is feeling. And do they feel like they can be at their best at practice? Do they feel motivated? Are they focused? And if they're saying no, then something needs to be changed within the nutrition plan. And no amount of hiring extra trainers and doing extra skill work and camps is going to suffice. If you want to have an edge, make sure your nutrition is right.
I love that. I think the meal log idea is a really great starting point, where go ahead and log what you're eating on one page that day. And on the other page, how did it make you feel? How did you wake up? How's your energy? How's your energy at practice? How's your energy during the day? Are you sleeping well? All of that, because there are a lot of correlations there that we don't even think about. We just eat what mom puts in front of us, and then we go on with our day. And I think a little more thought into what we're taking in is, and you're so spot on, Erica, you're so spot on. It's wild when we get these college athletes coming into it, you can tell almost immediately with enough experience, the malnourished. And I say, we have a lot of American athletes that are malnourished. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, we're not talking about the see the ribs type amount, although sometimes we are, but we're talking about they're just not getting the right nutrients and the right amount of nutrients through their body. I'm so glad you're addressing this. And the sleep issue, right? The sleep issue. What do you recommend? Like, if you give a couple of sleep tips to your clients, what do you recommend to them to start as a starting point?
The first thing everyone needs to know is that sleep deprivation can be a higher risk for injury than lack of strength training. So sleep is like one of the most important things to prevent injury, because that's when the muscles recover and the brain also recovers as well. So definitely more than 8 hours. A lot of research says if athletes are getting less than 6 hours a night of sleep, they're at a 2 times more chance to get an ACL injury. So sleep is extremely crucial, but start small with getting better sleep. And I recommend, yes, you need to be off your mobile device a few hours before, but if you can't do 2 hours right off the bat, start small. Just get off 10 minutes before, and then slowly increase that to 30 minutes. And another one is to just make sure the lights are dimmed in the house right before bed. So that hour before bed, and that's a much easier one to do than doing the mobile device. So that's another good one. And then just making sure that you're going throughout your day, just not in a constant state of stress, because if the nervous system is constantly on overdrive, then it's going to be very hard for it to shut off at night. So I know that homework is a lot, and then you got practices, but if you are stressed out, you can do some deep breathing before bed as well to calm down from your day, or just do it throughout your day too. So those are my biggest tips. And also another one is making sure you're getting enough magnesium rich foods, because magnesium is a nervous system relaxer. I take magnesium supplements. I definitely recommend people do their own research on it, but it's definitely helped a lot.
Those are great tips. Great tips. Guys, you're getting a lot of free advice from Erica. I love it. There's more in her book. There's more in her book. There's a lot more to this. Erica, where do we find you? How can people connect with you if people are interested in talking about training for their daughter? Now, you do female clients only, so my male clients shouldn't contact you or people, or how does that work? Tell us how to find you and who should be looking for you, and where can we get your book?
Sure. So yeah, I mainly do female clients, but I still do train a few male soccer players. So it's open to anyone who's ready to work hard. And then you can find me on Twitter at @FitSoccerQueen. And then the Strong Female Athlete book is available on Amazon, paperback as well as Kindle. So you can find it on there.
Fantastic. Erica, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled. And we're ready to announce a little partnership here, aren't we?
Yes, super exciting.
So I talked to Erica about coming on to our advisory board. We've got Dan Abrahams taking care of the psychology piece. Erica's going to be providing us with some blog posts and links to her books and things that we can share. We're going to be announcing a discount code for SRUSA people. So I'm going to be pointing you guys that direction. And Erica's part of our new advisory board. So thank you, Erica, for offering to do this for us. I'm so excited.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really grateful to be on with you guys. And again, I trust you guys the most. And I just absolutely love what you do. So just keep up the good work.
Erica, will you be going to the convention this year?
No, I'm not. Yeah, not this year. Yeah. I'm actually going to Chicago for another conference.
Yeah, it's really difficult. There's a lot going on. But
where folks, is it?
So the United Soccer Coaches Convention this year is in Kansas City, Missouri. Okay. It's January 19th through the 23rd. Anybody that wants to go, there are speakers like you cannot believe. Very, very, very top people in the world doing presentations on the field, showing coaches how to coach. There's lectures. If you go to United Soccer Coaches Convention.org, everybody, you can read all about it, who the presenters are, and decide if you're going to go. For anybody who's not been, Erica, I really highly recommend it. Did you know it's the largest coaching organization in the world?
I didn't know that. I went to the one in Baltimore a few years ago in 2020, I think.
Pre-COVID, our last outing.
Yeah, right before everything. But yeah, that was amazing. And that was when I was living in Baltimore. I was like, I can't believe this is here and like 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah, exactly. So all of you guys out there, I hope to see you at the convention. If you're there, we'll be on Podcast Row. We'll have a booth set up on Podcast Row for Inside College Soccer, and we'll be talking to a lot of amazing people. So thank you again, Erica, for coming on. I really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording.